Welcome to Slowpreneur, a podcast about building a business without the busy. I'm your host, Stephanie Pellet, and I'm a coach for thoughtful, values-based entrepreneurs just like you. On this show, we talk about creating a business with intention, heart, and sustainability in mind. Join me as I connect with my friends and clients and share my own reflections on why slow and steady entrepreneurship will always win the race. This week on the podcast, we're back from our summer podcasting break and talking about things that we're just not doing anymore. Hello. Hi. How are you? How was your summer? How are you feeling about the back to school energy of it all? I'll tell you right now, I'm feeling tired. I'm not really sure why I am so tired this week, but it's a thing. I think the back to school energy and switching into work mode again and dealing with the really hot weather that we've been having have all added up to just being a little bit tired. So if you also are feeling like you're a bit on the back foot this season, I'm with you. I'm here. This is Slowpreneur, and we don't have to be on top of everything for September 1st or 5th or whenever things kind of take shape again in the world. I often say this when it comes to January energy, that sometimes it takes until practically the end of January for me to know what my goals are and to really feel like I have my feet solidly on the ground. So if it's taking you a little bit to get back in the swing of things after summer, don't worry. Don't stress. That's what we're here for. The slow energy that we want to bring to our businesses, it shows up here too. We don't have to rush and we don't have to get to a finish line. So hi, welcome back from summer break. Welcome back from our podcast summer break. This is part two of season two, and it's starting right now. We're going to run until December, and that'll be season two in the books, which is so exciting. I have a number of interviews lined up for you that I'm really excited about, and I'm also going to be coming to you solo, as I am wont to do, like I am today. But I want to start by giving an announcement about something that's going to be different on this second half of the season. You may notice, and you may not, that I'm coming to you audio only today. That's right. I had experimented with putting the first part of the season on YouTube, and I did this for a lot of reasons. I wanted to see whether it would lead to more reach for the podcast. I wanted to experiment with video, and I thought this was a good way to do it. And all in all, it was just that. It was an experiment. It wanted to see what would happen. And what happened was it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. And while it did get some additional reach, because as we all know, podcasts don't really have their own algorithm. It's not really a platform that lends itself very well to discoverability for your show. Unless people already know about it, it's kind of hard to stumble upon it. Although I have had a few people tell me that they did find it through internet searches or searching on their podcast app, which is really cool. But in general, YouTube is a much better platform for discoverability. So I was happy that there were a few more people who found the podcast that way, and that was cool. But overall, it was not worth it in terms of how much additional work it made for me. Not so much for the interviews, because of course those are recorded on video from the beginning and they're long form and it's pretty easy to put the final edits together. But for my solo episodes, it ended up being a ton more work than I anticipated, especially if we're talking about half hour long episodes. That's a lot of additional B-roll that I might want to include. It's a lot of, you know, text and titles and editing and chopping things up. It was just hard. Not only that, but it also was difficult to record. Like right now, I'm coming to you live from my bed because it is the best place in my house to have some sound dampening effects. My bedroom is a lot better than that a lot better at that than my office, for example. And while I am not in my pajamas, I definitely don't feel like camera ready per se. Yeah, I have my clothes on, I have my makeup on, but if I was getting ready to film a video, it probably would not be happening today because I, like I said, feel tired and I just feel like, yeah, this face is not ready for the camera at this particular moment in time. So I found myself running into that challenge a lot too, of feeling like I really had to gear myself up for recording videos and really needing to be 100% on and ready. And we don't always feel that way, right? So that was an experiment. And honestly, it was a really good experiment. I learned a lot. I committed to it for the first half of the season. I got all those videos done. I'm glad that they're out there. And I learned a lot about doing more content on YouTube, about how I should make my thumbnails and what I would do differently next time in terms of the videos. And basically what I learned is that I do still want to do YouTube, but I don't want to do the podcast on YouTube. If I'm going to do a YouTube video, I want it to be a standalone thing, probably only 5 minutes long, so it's a lot easier to edit, and it's a lot easier for people to consume. Nobody's really sitting on YouTube watching 35-minute podcast episodes that I know of, right? So I will still go forward with it, but I'm not going to do it in that way. And that idea or that concept, that realization that I had that I do want to do this, but not in that way, is kind of the inspiration for this podcast episode, which as I'm recording it is tentatively titled Things We're Just Not Doing Anymore. It might get a little SEO edit before it reaches your ears, but that is the basic nugget that I want to start with, is I realized that doing the podcast on YouTube made everything harder. It made the podcast harder to record. It made it feel like a sense of dread every time I thought about editing those long form episodes. And I feel like it wasn't necessarily the best format for YouTube itself. YouTube really does lend itself well to shorter form content and things that are optimized specifically for that platform. So trying to kind of blend the two worlds together just because I wanted to make it easier on myself actually made it harder on myself. And having those kinds of recognitions helps me to say, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to force myself to record the podcast in video form just because that's, you know, considered a quote unquote best practice. Get your things on multiple platforms and leverage the algorithm of YouTube. Those are all great pieces of advice in principle, but I tried it. And in practice, it actually made the whole process harder for me to the point that I, again, was resisting sitting down and doing my episodes, or they took me 3-4 times as long as I really wanted them to take. The point of this podcast is for me to connect with you, right? It's for me to share the things that I'm thinking about, to share new ideas with you that I hope will be helpful. And that does not rely on having B-roll on YouTube. It does not rely on me looking amazing. I can just express these ideas to you, and I can do that in a way that feels really easy. As of recording this right now, I just sat down and started recording, and I've made maybe 2 mistakes that I know I have to go back and fix. But other than that, it's going to be a really simple process to edit this and get it to you. And that is what we are really going for. I've talked a lot before on the podcast about going through seasons of business burnout or different stressful times in life when you have to renegotiate what's on your plate. And I think this is a great example of that. I'm renegotiating. I want to make content and I want to do it in a way that is helpful, but I don't need to do it in a specific way just because I committed to that at the beginning of this season. I'm allowed to say, I'm just not doing that anymore, and not do it anymore. So let's get into the episode, because I'm going to use this example as a jumping off point to give you a bunch of other examples, including one extremely hilarious example from my own personal life that are hopefully going to be inspirational to you to look around at the different aspects and areas of your personal life, your routines, your business life, your systems, and see what doesn't need to happen anymore. This episode of Slowpreneur is sponsored by The Profoundry, a coaching and community program for thoughtful entrepreneurs run by yours truly. If you've been looking for a supportive group of business besties who share your values and really get it, this could be the perfect membership for you because these people are truly amazing. Every month in the program, we have a bunch of different calls. For example, productivity parties to get our work done together, workshops on things like project planning, balance and boundaries, or goal setting. And we often do creative think tanks that offer custom group coaching for members for whatever they might be struggling with. We also have a really supportive Slack community with weekly check-ins. We have a resource library full of recordings and interesting workshops, and a business book club so that you can learn about business from interesting and diverse authors. If this sounds like your cup of tea, I'd love for you to come check it out. You can learn more and get your first productivity party pass for free by going to stephaniepellet.com/profoundry. I would love to see you there. Arianna Huffington has this amazing idea in her book, Thrive, which is that we can complete a project by dropping it. That is the fastest and easiest way to check something off of your to-do list is to just decide that you don't want or need to do it anymore. I think for her, it was a particular goal that she had that was starting to feel almost more draining to pursue than it was inspirational for her to achieve. And she realized, I could force myself to try to be the kind of person who wants to, I don't know what it was, go on multiple ski trips a year or, you know, achieve this particular award. I don't remember. But she said, or I could just drop that as a goal. I could just accept myself and know that I don't actually really want on the inside, really, really want that thing. And so the fastest way to check it off is to just say, we're not doing that anymore. We're not going to do it anymore. Now, I think that this kind of thinking can create anxiety for us, right? Because the idea of closing doors to ourselves can feel stressful. It can feel like it's more constricting rather than more freeing, which to me, these kinds of things often feel more freeing. Just deciding that something is not a part of my identity or my life or my practices can feel so freeing. It can feel so exciting to just say, oh, I don't do that. You know, I feel like that actually opens up more possibilities. But if you're somebody who is listening to this and feeling like the idea of closing off possibilities feels more stressful to me than just doing everything and committing to everything, then here's what I would say to you. Two things. Number one, you can always make an exception to the rule, but you have to have a rule in the first place in order to make exceptions. I have noticed this with clients before where we're trying to put a policy in place, let's say after hours support for clients, if you're a therapist, for example. And the client will say, I feel really stressed out by the idea of putting this boundary in place, because sometimes I have a client who genuinely needs support after hours and maybe is having a mental health crisis, and I don't want to leave them hanging and leave them stranded, and that's really important to me. Okay, great. I'm so glad that you know that, and I feel like this is a prime example of you always have the judgment to make an exception to your own rules. If you have this policy in place that in general, you are not accessible after hours, you can always look at that and look at the situation in front of you and say, actually, this is a case in which this person is having a crisis and I really do want to be there for that person. But all of these other situations that are happening with other clients who are perhaps not having crises, perhaps they're just feeling a little bit stressed out and anxious and want to contact me, I don't need to include them in my exception. And I think sometimes we resist putting in the rule in the first place because we're worried that we'll have to make exceptions or that, you know, the exceptions are more common. But I actually find that usually these things follow the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, your boundary and your policy is not a problem. And 20% of the time, maybe there are extenuating circumstances that you need to make an adjustment and you need to say, okay, exception needs to be made here. Let's go ahead and do that. But the problem is, like, the other 80% of the time, you didn't need to make that exception. And so if you're resisting making the rule 100% of the time, you're going to be doing the thing that should really be the exception to the rule. You know what I mean? So in this case, if you're feeling like, I don't want to say that I just don't do something anymore because that feels stressful or it feels hard or whatever, just remember, you can make that your basic policy and then you can always make an exception. Great example for me is I would typically say I don't do, you know, coffee dates where someone wants to pick my brain, right? I've kind of realized that oftentimes that's not the best use of my time and it's not always helpful to the other person. But if I had somebody who was, say, a family friend and they really want to learn, I don't know, how to start a business, they're just out of school and they're feeling a little bit stressed about the process, maybe I would make an exception there. Maybe I would say, okay, you know what? I want to do this person a solid. I want to do them a favor. So I will make an exception to my own rule. But most of the time, I don't need to make the exception because most of the time, the situation does not actually call for that. So that's point numero uno. Numero dos, if you're feeling a little bit of stress about setting up some of these policies for yourself or setting these boundaries for yourself, is that you could always pick a time to revisit your policy and then not worry about it until that time. I remember getting this idea from an interview that Gretchen Rubin did with Kate Bowler early on in the pandemic when everything was changing so fast. Do you remember those like good old days? I'm just kidding, but those days when the recommendations from the government would be changing every few days and you weren't sure what to do, you weren't sure what was best. And Kate Bowler talked about how she would set up these kind of policies for her family of what they were comfortable with, what they were going to do, and then she would set a specific time to revisit that policy. So let's say 2 weeks from then, she would revisit the general recommendations and make sure that the choices they were making were still in alignment with what was recommended. And in the meantime space, she would not be obsessively looking and checking and questioning herself and wondering whether she had made the right decision. So let's borrow that idea because I think it's a really good one. If we set up these ideas for ourselves, things we're just not doing anymore, that doesn't have to be a permanent state, right? That doesn't have to be a forever thing. Our lives are so cyclical, so seasonal. And so even though things we're not doing anymore feels very permanent, it doesn't have to. We could add the addendum, things we're not doing anymore this season, but it doesn't roll off the tongue as much. So just assume in the back of your mind that you can always change this. I mean, it sounds very obvious, but you can always change this. I'm just offering it as an option if it feels good to look around and see whether there are things that we could drop. Sometimes you need to do something before you know that you don't want to do it, right? So my YouTube example is a perfect example. I do not want to do the podcast on YouTube. Period. The end. I do still want to do YouTube, but I don't want to do the podcast on YouTube. But I never would have known that if I hadn't tried. So I think it's really important, you know, you may not know all of these things right off the bat, but if we try them out and we can feel that they're draining us, then it's time to drop it. I also think it's so important to do this because deciding what you're not going to do is really a good shortcut emotionally to avoid guilt or avoid shame. Because if we're constantly questioning our decisions to do or not do something, that is a direct route to feeling guilty, right? So if we think to ourselves, okay, I'm going to a potluck and I'm just going to say that for a potluck, I never make something homemade. This is not my own personal policy. I'm just trying to think of an example, right? That's just not who I am. I'm just going to get a really nice cheese board and some seasonal fruit, and that is what I can do. And I'm not going to do the stressing out, trying to find a recipe, baking when I'm not a baker, blah, blah, blah. That's just not who I am. So I'm not going to do that anymore. My contribution will be something I feel good about, but is not going to be a drain on my resources. And what that does is I think it helps you cut through the guilt or the shame. It doesn't make you question yourself as much. When you're thinking about this, you just get to skip that step. You just get to say, no, I don't need to feel guilty. I'm still contributing, but that's just not who I am. It's just not something I do. And so let's skip the part where we feel really bad about ourselves. If we don't have that as kind of a clear policy, as a thing we just don't do, we might question it every single time. Every time we have a potluck or a gathering or a party to go to, we might think to ourselves, gosh, you know, I just never bake anything homemade. Like, should I bake something? Like, should I make like a special like dip? Like, Allison Roman had that thing. Maybe I could do that. Like, maybe I should do it. Oh my goodness. Okay. Contrast that and the amount of wasted energy that we just used, even in that like simulation I just did. Contrast that with having your signature dish that you always bring. It is like those fig apple crackers from the Bougie brand and boursin cheese and I don't know, some flatbread that your bakery sells. Bada bing, bada boom, we are ready for business and we don't have to waste any energy whatsoever questioning whether or not we should have done the homemade option. Okay, so we need these shortcuts. We need to get ways to cut through guilt and shame. Guilt and shame are exhausting. We do not have time for those things. So skip over to the next thing. And on this note, I actually feel, and I've talked about this before on my newsletter, I actually feel that having this called a personal policy can make it so much easier to explain to yourself and to explain to other people. So if you say something is your personal policy, I have a personal policy to never have pick your brain chats because I have found they are not super helpful for my business or for the person who's wanting to pick my brain. That feels a lot less personal than no, nice person, I will not have coffee with you and let you pick my brain, right? Personal policy makes it feel global. It makes it feel more broad. It's not specific to a, you know, another person. It's not anything that they did wrong. It's just your personal policy. Now, obviously, you're not going to say, I have a personal policy to never bake a cake for a party. But for certain things, especially in business or kind of life admin tasks, this can be really helpful. So I'll give you a great example of a world famous, in my world, personal policy that my grandma has. So my grandma has always been very generous. She has always donated to a lot of different charities. And I would remember, you know, at tax season, she'd lay out all of her contribution slips on the dining room table, and there would be so many that she had donated to. However, my grandmother never said yes to donating to a request to donate. She had a personal policy, and I don't know whether she would have called it that or if it's just something I called it, but she had a personal policy to only make her donations either in a monthly contribution that she had decided upon or at the end of the year. You know, in December or whatever, when there were more drives for giving and she would give then. So if someone stopped her on the street, if it was a friend who was asking for a contribution for their daughter's, you know, run for Conquer Cancer, my grandmother knew that she felt good about the contributions she was making to the organizations that she had decided that she wanted to support. And she just said no to all of the other requests. And again, this is something where it's interesting, right? Like when we first hear that, we think, oh gosh, but I'm going to feel so bad if somebody asks me, you know, and I have to say no. Maybe I'm going to feel guilty every time. But again, with these shortcuts about skipping the guilt and the shame, if she felt and she did, that she had her bases covered in terms of the causes and organizations that she wanted to support, that she felt were making a huge difference, then she was content to stay in her lane, right? Other people were more than welcome to support any charities that they wanted to support, and she felt good about making the contributions that she could afford to make and that she felt good about making without feeling any pressure to change her systems of doing that. And I think it worked really well for her. And she, again, was one of the most generous people that I know because she was consistent and she did it in a way that aligned with her values. So having this like personal policy was, I mean, probably saved her money in terms of, you know, not feeling like she had to contribute to every single request for donation that came her way, but also made her feel like she was really in alignment with the way she wanted to live without questioning herself constantly. I love that example, and I think it really shows the power of a personal policy to really help you stand your ground and make you feel good about the choices that you're making without draining yourself, without giving on to these energy leaks that have a way of infiltrating our lives. This actually shows up every single week in the Profoundery because something that I realized pretty early on was that it was actually very helpful for people to declare what they were not going to do in a specific week, not just what they were going to do. And this is now something that I bake into everything I do in the community and even with one-on-one clients is just this idea of a back burner, like an active back burner that we will come back to. It's simmering away back there in the background, but we are not putting it on the front burner this week, this season, etc. So in the Profoundery, every week we have, you know, a list of priorities. I make it like really funny. Like I've done like a Little Mermaid themed one. I always choose a different metaphor, Harry Potter themed one. Like, oh my gosh, there's been so many. And I basically always have four categories. What are your priorities this week? What are your maybes? So things that if you have a little extra time and energy, you'll try to get to. What are your not going to do's? Like say it up front. You know, say it up front what you're not going to do. And then number four, what are the fun things that you're going to do in your week? So the reason that I have the not going to do's is again, this guilt and shame situation. I do not want you to feel like if it's a week where you have a million things going on, maybe you're traveling, right? Maybe you're going to visit family, okay? You're not also probably going to clean your entire house and declutter your closets and, you know, bake a special apple pie, like whatever. I know I'm on a baking thing right now. I don't know. I made two plum cakes over the weekend and they were amazing. So now I'm feeling like maybe I am re-entering a baking era. Maybe I am. But the point is, like, even if decluttering your closets has been something that is on your mind for a while, maybe that's like a legitimate thing that you need to do. You want to declutter. You're not going to do that on this travel week. So don't put it on your list or don't even let it kind of subconsciously be on your list in the background, making you feel guilty for not doing it. Instead, we have these not doing lists, things we are not going to do, because I think there's a real power in that. There's a real power in saying, I do need to reach out to my accountant and ask them these questions, but I am not doing that this week. That is going on the back burner. And then we can always, next week, look back on this week's list and see, okay, what was on my not doing list that maybe does need to be upgraded to the maybe list or to the priority list? Maybe this is the week that I declutter or reach out to my dentist or whatever, whatever, whatever. But if it's not the week for it, then we put it somewhere specific. We don't let it be this kind of, oh man, thing that's just swirling in the background, like this fog of maybe I should energy. No, we put it on this list so that we don't have to feel guilty every single time.
This is not an ad, it's a pause. I've decided to build an intentional break into every episode of Slowpreneur because I know I'm throwing a lot of ideas and hopefully inspiration your way, and I wanted to give you a moment to integrate it, to not have to pay attention, to not have to absorb anymore, to just marinate on what we've talked about so far and take a breath before we continue. Now let's get back to the show.
Are you ready for my like funny example of this? Like things we're not doing anymore energy. The other day I was in the shower and I looked down at these amber glass bottles that I bought because I was influenced by Alexandra Gator, who I love, to decant my shampoo and my conditioner into these bottles. Okay. I've been doing this for a few years. I looked at the bottles and I was like, we're not doing that anymore. We're not decanting our shampoo and our conditioner. Listen, we're too tired for decanting. I have entered my anti-decanting era. Okay. We are not decanting shampoo and conditioner anymore. The shampoo was actually fine. The body wash was not too bad, but the conditioner, my goodness. If anyone here has tried to decant conditioner, let me tell you, it's so annoying. It doesn't flow. So it like doesn't go in the bottle. Like it makes a huge mess. Like, no, they sell them in bottles. Like we don't need to decant them. We're just not doing that anymore. Okay. It sounds like a small thing. I know it does. I know it sounds funny. I know it sounds silly, but I have been really inspired lately by Caroline Winkler on YouTube, and she has this whole series of videos that are kind of about like, she has one that's like the Lazy Girl's Guide to Decorating, I think, Lazy Person's Guide, I don't know, and she talks about doing her kitchen makeover, but in like the laziest possible way, because she's like, we just don't have time. We don't have time and we don't have energy, and that's how I feel about my shampoo bottles. I just went to the store and I got a shampoo bottle that has a pump and I will be using that. And maybe one day I will go back to decanting. Maybe I will. I'm never saying no. I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say I can never revisit this. Maybe there will come a time, but this time is not that time. And we are not doing that anymore. Bringing it back around to business, you know, let's focus on some business examples. One example would be choosing platforms, social media platforms that you're just not using anymore or period at all. So for me, I did get on Threads at one point and I have not posted a thread, but I was responding to other people's and I was kind of seeing what was going on. And then after about 3 days, I was like, no, we're not doing this. I'm not doing it. That does not mean that I don't think it could be a useful platform for many people. I need to be clear here. Like, if you want to decant your shampoo bottles, please, oh my gosh, take all that extra capacity you have compared to me and put it into your shampoo bottles. I would love that for you. I actually want you to do that if you want to do that. I want you to use Threads if you love Threads. This is a personal exercise. This is for you. Right? To look at yourself, to look at what you're already doing, you know, behavioral clues, things that you are clearly avoiding, clearly dreading, clearly annoyed by, and use those clues to make some policies for yourself, to make some different decisions that make you feel better about the way that you're using your time and energy. So again, Threads. I was like, we're not doing this. I've also thought about Twitter or X, as it is now called, apparently, many times throughout the years. I used to have a Twitter account when I was in university and kind of for my blog. And at a certain point, I was like, I'm just not doing this anymore. I'm not doing it. And have I reconsidered that a couple times? Yes, I have. I have looked at it. I gave it a chance. On Threads, I feel I gave it a real college try. And then I was like, no. We're not doing this. Same with TikTok. I got TikTok in the peak of the pandemic. I absolutely loved it. It also like rotted my brain, I think, because I would spend hours on TikTok. I did make some like extremely cringeworthy dance videos that have all been taken down now. Thank you very much. They were very fun for me to make, but like those will not be on the internet any longer. And that was something that I realized is great for so many businesses, and it's just not going to be for me, at least not in this season, but like not for a couple seasons. Like we're not revisiting that anytime soon. That is just an idea, a decision that I have made. And I think that there is a power in deciding, right? This is kind of what it all comes down to. The power of making the decision makes you feel a sense of agency, clarity, purpose, where you don't have to waste any time questioning yourself. You don't have to constantly every day see someone who is killing it on Threads and be like, yeah, I should also be on Threads. I think there's an Amy Poehler quote that is good for her, not for me. Or obviously we could make that not gendered. Good for them, not for me. Good for them. Good for them. They decant their shampoo. Not for me. I'm just going to try to get like cute pre-packaged shampoo bottles. Like there are marketing teams that spend a lot of money and time and energy making their bottles look cute. Let's just use those. Like, we're just not doing it anymore. Okay. Another example that is kind of infamous in my friend group is with Miss Sonny Seiler, who obviously runs Nurture Retreats and is incredible. And I remember this one retreat that we did, a personal retreat with her and her sister and I, where we're hitting our heads against the wall, trying to figure out how to make catering work for her business model. And every single idea we came up with felt hard and felt wrong. And we were trying for like an hour to try to figure out a way to make it make sense financially, energetically, etc. Until we came to this idea of what if, even though there are some reasons that this could be an in-demand service, there are reasons that people are asking you to cater a meal, what if you just didn't do that? And it was like this light bulb went off in the entire room. It was like this sense of relief washed over her. It was like we all felt this sense of like peace and clarity, because it was just so obvious that catering per se, which is like making the food at your own house and then dropping it off for a party, that was just not gonna work for her. She was happy to be a private chef, where you come in and you sort of make the food for the party while you're there, and you can present the dishes and, you know, whatever, whatever. She does do bespoke menus still to this day, and will help with like an anniversary party or, you know, a retreat is a big piece of what she does. But catering, the way that catering as a business model up until that point had been thought of, that was not going to work for her anymore. And the idea of just dropping it completely as an option, not trying to make it work, not trying to figure out a way that it made sense, but just dropping it, just saying no, no more of this. It was like, again, this huge wave of relief. I don't know for sure, but I can imagine that Rachel Kelly, who I interviewed on the podcast, felt the same way when she decided to not do the Get Shit Done Club anymore. In fact, I do know that for a fact. I do know that for a fact because she's told me. Once she decided, I'm just not going to do this anymore, even though I could, right? I could make it work around my schedule. I know that there's a lot of people who love this club. I know that there's been a real community that has formed, but I don't feel like I can do it justice anymore because I don't really want to do it anymore. Her heart was in her new career path of floristry, and she is absolutely killing the game, by the way. So I think it was the right decision for her, but it was such, I think, a relief for her to just make that decision finally and say, as much as this could be a good idea for someone, it's not a good idea for me. And I think that there's so much power in deciding that. There's so much power in recognizing who you are and who you are not. The kinds of things that you can do and will enthusiastically do, and the things that you will not. This is reminding me of another concept from Mark Manson, which is the shit sandwich. So Elizabeth Gilbert references it in her book Big Magic, which I also love and recommend, but it's this idea that in any career, there's going to be the equivalent of eating a shit sandwich, right? There's going to be things you don't want to do, but you do anyway, because it's worth it for the career and the path that you want. So for Elizabeth Gilbert, this was getting rejection letters, putting her work out there into the world and hearing back from editors and publishing companies that were like, no, 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 right? That's the shit sandwich. That's what you have to go through to be a writer. And she had a friend who would get so demoralized and so overwhelmed every time he received a rejection letter. And for her, it was the equivalent of him saying he didn't want his shit sandwich and her being like, oh, you're not going to finish that? I'll eat it. Because she just wanted it so badly. But I think that there's a power in this concept, right? There are shit sandwiches. There are things that we don't want to do that we do. Okay? That's one category over here. But then there's also this other category of things we don't want to do that we don't have to do. It's like, it's not the mandatory shit sandwich that we have to eat, right? I do not mandatorily have to decant my shampoo. That was an elective torture. That was the torture I was giving to myself because I thought it looked cute, which it did. It did. But it was not worth it for me, right? So that's not a shit sandwich. That's not just like the price of admission for, you know, having a cute house or whatever. That was, and maybe in a certain season it had been, right? This is a bit of a pain in the butt, but I'm going to do it because I want the outcome. This was now in this new season, something that I just don't want to do. Something that is not contributing to my happiness. I don't think it's making a big difference in terms of a positive change. It's only making a difference in terms of a negative change. So we're just not doing it anymore. Okay, so let's land this plane. Let's look around our lives and see whether there are things we can just choose, at least for this season, that we are not doing anymore, right? So, you know, maybe when it comes to cooking, we are not making elaborate 5-step, is 5 steps a lot? 15-step recipes from that fancy cookbook that in a previous season of life, we had the capacity for. Maybe we're just not doing that right now. Maybe when we go home to visit family, we're just not staying at our parents' house because we know that it's just not going to work for our family. Maybe when it comes to business, we just really need to stop doing those elaborate Canva designs for every single post that we make on Instagram, and we need to start just doing photos again because it's just become too much. Maybe when a client asks us to offer a particular service that is making us feel dead inside, we just say, actually, I don't do that anymore. But here's another person who does. There are so many places that things like this could come up. And I think it's really an exercise in noticing. And maybe you don't have a list right now. Maybe there aren't a million things that are coming to your mind that you need to stop doing. But I would offer this to you as a thought experiment and as a permission-giving exercise, that the next time that you notice that there is something in your life that you are dreading, that you are annoyed by, that you are anxious about, that is not overall contributing to your happiness or making a huge difference, and is optional, let's just drop it, right? Not everything is optional. There are things that we have to do that we don't want to do. That's why I brought in the shit sandwich idea. You know, you can't just say making my kids' lunches is just not bringing me happiness anymore. So I'm just not going to make their lunches. Although, you know, is there a lunch program? Can you just pay for them to get lunch at school? Or can you teach them to make their own lunches? Or can you drastically simplify the process of making their lunches? You know, there are options, right? But I'm not saying just drop all the things you don't want to do, but I am saying drop the things that are optional that you are just forcing yourself to do, like decant shampoo and put the podcast episode on YouTube and. Okay? So that's your thought experiment for the week. That's what we're going to come into September holding this energy in our hearts. What are the things that we just do not want to do anymore and do not have to do anymore? That is a sweet spot. And I would love to hear if you uncover any, because I am currently on a real process of like trying to find these things. The shampoo was a real wake-up call for me. I need to find more things like this. What are more things that I'm just not going to do? There's so much freedom in it. It's so exciting. It's so fun to find the things that I'm like, nope, not doing that. Not going to do that. We don't have time for that. We're not doing that. So I would love to hear if there are anything that you like discover in this process or realize for yourself. Let me know. You know, I love to hear. I would love to collect examples of things we're just not doing anymore. What are we just not doing? Like, I kind of want to know what you're not doing so I can also not do that thing, you know? Anyway, so think on it. Think on it. Think about it. Figure it out. And I give you full permission that if it is something that is not bringing you joy and there is a way to do it without seriously impacting your health or the health of others, just don't do it. Don't do it. That's my message for you today. I am really excited to be back on the podcast. I feel like recording these always helps me so much and I hope is helpful to you. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to be back in a couple weeks with an interview with an amazing individual who I am really inspired by. So stay tuned for that. If you're not already subscribed, please do. And thank you again for listening. I hope you have an amazing week and I will talk to you very soon. Thanks so much for listening to Slowpreneur. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend or reach out and let me know at hello@stephaniepellet.com. I would love to hear from you. As always, you can find show notes for this and all episodes at stephaniepellet.com/slowpreneur. Thanks for listening and I'll talk to you soon.